I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. They say it takes a village to raise a child, but maybe you just need a few moms in your corner. Every week, we check in with a diverse group of parents for their common sense and savvy parenting advice. This week, we wanted to take a look at so-called zero-tolerance disciplinary policies in schools. This is on our radar in part because of a number of stories that have been in the news here in the Washington, D.C. area. Here, a high school student took his life in January after having been suspended and recommended for expulsion from his school. We will get into the details in a moment, but he was the second student in 2 years to die of suicide in the aftermath of a disciplinary infraction in that area. And that's prompted many parents and school officials far beyond that school system to ask more questions about the way schools are meting out punishment. In Philadelphia, for example, a youth advocacy group recently released a report saying that zero-tolerance rules don't help kids at all. Rather, that they get in the way of kids' educational opportunities and are particularly destructive to minority kids, who this group said are more likely to then be put on the path to prison. Needless to say, other people disagree and argue that zero-tolerance policies are necessary and fair. We wanted to talk more about this, so we've called upon Petula Dvorak, a columnist for The Washington Post. She's covered these stories in her column. She's here in our Washington, D.C. studio, along with our regular mom's contributor, Danny Tucker. Also with us, child and adolescent psychiatrist Jenna Saul. Dr. Saul joins us from Marshfield, Wisconsin, and it just so happens that everybody in the group is a mother of two children. So there's that. So welcome to everybody. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Petula, excellent. Let's start with you. And we mentioned the story of Nick Steuben. Mm-hmm. He was 15 years old. He was kicked out of school. You've written about this in your column extensively, right. And you've talked to many of the people involved. So you could just tell us the details.
Please. Sure. Nick was literally a Boy Scout, and you couldn't imagine, from what I understand, a more unlikely candidate for expulsion. He was a Boy Scout. He was in his church. He was on the football team, and he did something dumb, which I think teenagers all have at least a couple in their back pockets, right? He bought a substance that is a controlled substance. It's not illegal, JWH-018. It's a spice that supposedly mimics the effects of marijuana. And he bought some, supposedly tried it at home and tossed it, thought it was weird, it was over. But of course, someone had on campus had told, someone got caught with it and told an administrator that Nick was one of the guys who bought it. And they called him in. Nick said, yes, I bought it. It was dumb. I'm sorry. Well, this turned into a huge affair because he was hauled in before a disciplinary review board, recommended for expulsion.
And but you're telling me this is not illegal.
No, so, the substance was not illegal.
So what was the policy under which he was recommended for expulsion?
The policy, and this goes back to the policy book that Fairfax has, which lays out all the things that children can and cannot do in school. And one of those was that they are not allowed to be in possession of an illegal substance. I got an email from some mom whose daughter was expelled who pretended to sell marijuana. It was a bag of oregano. She was 13. She was being goofy. She was expelled. So that is one of the policies. And it's a really sad story. Nick's parents are both military. His mom is fighting Lou Gehrig's disease. And, you know, this is a kid who would get up in the middle of the night to trach suction his mom because her alarm was going off. So he found a lot of comfort, a lot of familiarity, and a lot of succor in his peer group at high school. He begged to be let back in, and they wouldn't let him in.
And so you think the parents believe that his despair was so great from being isolated from his friends and from his team, basically everything that was important to him outside of his family was at school, and that separation from them is what the parents believe triggered this depression, which then
led
manifested
to
in suicide.
Exactly.
And as we mentioned, this is the second incident,
the second incident
in that school system, which is outside of Washington, D.C. And I do think it's important to mention that, you know, we don't really always know why people take their own lives. It could be many events that we don't, you know, always know. But this has occasioned a lot of soul searching, Petula. And I do want to emphasize also that the school system says that they don't have a zero tolerance policy. They say that they don't. But tell us what the reaction to this has been.
Well, my colleague Donna St. George really delved in and spoke to Nick Steuben's family and kind of laid it all out. And then I took it after her excellent story was in our Sunday paper. I took it a step further and kind of looked at what that policy means to kids. So I wrote this column. And by 3 in the morning, my BlackBerry on my side table was buzzing. And I had already already gotten several dozen stories from parents who had the same stories. And by the next morning, we were flooded. You know, the 13-year-old expelled for oregano, the high school senior expelled because some guy in his car was brandishing a fake weapon. This guy's a junior in college now, and his father called me just sobbing, saying he still hasn't recovered from the trauma of this expulsion and this whole experience, taking good kids and punishing them and completely deconstructing all of the things that a school does that is right, giving kids a sense of self, community, ambition, wanting. These kids are begging to go back to school and apologizing, and they take that down, and that's where it really destroys kids, doesn't teach them.
Just another perspective on this, Danny, before we're going to bring Dr. Saul in here to talk more about the educational aspects of it, but you actually have a different perspective, even though your son has been suspended under these policies. I'll just say by way of background that we did some research on this, and it seems that many of these policies date to the tragedy at Columbine High School, where school districts began expressing a lot of concern about safety issues. And I know, Danny, that is something that you are concerned about as well. Having said that, you still feel that you can defend these policies. Tell us your perspective on this.
I agree with a lot that's been said. I think what happened to Nick is just wrong. You know, they dropped the ball on him. But where I come from, we need those policies because many of our high schools in the urban area are under siege. And, the teachers aren't able to teach, the students aren't able to learn because you've got this bad element who's just getting hand slapped, you know, and sent back to school. And you've got, massive fights and shootings and stabbings. And that's just not a learning environment.
So you feel that they need tools to get kids out of the classroom who aren't really there.
Oh, yes.
And that they don't need multiple opportunities to mess up,
Of them. I mean, bottom line, in my neighborhood, I know the ones that are just not doing anything but disrupting school. Now, if I know it and I'm not the teacher, then I know you know it.
Even though your son was suspended over what you consider to be a really ridiculous experience, that was after a food fight in the cafeteria.
A food fight in the cafeteria. First time he was ever suspended. 12th grade year, he got suspended for 5 days. The severest penalty for a food fight that went on for 2 days. But two of the guys were not suspended because the administrators did do what I think others should do. They sort of took it by a case-by-case basis, and they saved these two football players who were guilty of violating one of those codes, just like you read off.
They threatened your son because they thought he was throwing food at them.
Right.
And your son was suspended because the teacher said that she saw him throw
food.
Something.
But the other two were given a quote-unquote talking to and sent back to class. So I had to take that hat on because my bottom line is there's got to be a better way to do this than the way we're doing it.
To that point, Dr. Saul, why don't you jump in here? Tell us, first of all, just what is your take on these policies?
When it comes to zero tolerance, I think those sorts of policies are wrong on many levels. First, I think if we as adults are supposed to be providing modeling for our children, then one of the things we should be modeling is critical thinking, taking all the information in that we're given, and making good judgments and good decisions based on the information that we have. And zero tolerance is really a lazy man's way to do it. It means that you're not taking into consideration the many factors that are presenting.
You also have a concern that expelling children, you've told us, rarely does anything good for anybody. Tell us more about that.
Well, on so many levels, expulsion is just such a destructive thing to do. First of all, it doesn't function as a deterrent. It doesn't make kids say, oh, I better not do this because I could get expelled. And so it isn't a safety measure in terms of prevention. When we do expel kids, what happens then is that they've lost the structured, supervised environment that they were in, and we don't know where they are in our communities. And so if they're a high-risk child for making bad decisions and doing some antisocial behaviors, we've just placed them in a situation that increases the likelihood that they'll do that. And if we have a child who's at low risk for engaging those behaviors, but we've cut them off from all the things that they hold precious, well, we've done something horrible to them as well.
If you're just joining us, I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly Moms Conversation. We're talking about zero-tolerance disciplinary policies in schools. With us, Dr. Jenna Saul. She's an adolescent psychiatrist in Wisconsin. That's who was speaking just now. Also with us, Washington Post columnist Petula Dvorak and Danny Tucker, our regular Moms contributors. But Dr. Saul, let me just press this whole question about what about kids who threaten other kids? What about kids who teachers are scared of. I mean, even if it is a first infraction, somebody who threatens another kid, who hits another kid, who expresses himself or herself in a violent way. In fact, I will say that after that that Philadelphia advocacy group published its report, it received a number of letters from teachers saying, some of these kids have to go or I'm going. So what do you say to that? What's a better way?
Well, certainly if a child is causing enough disruption in a classroom to make other kids fearful and to make the teacher fearful, then that's probably not the right learning environment for them. And it's also the case that with decreased school funding, it's getting harder and harder to provide individualized or specialized environments that meet a child's needs where they're at.
Patila, I wanted to ask you this whole question of fairness, that there are parents will say and teachers will say, this individualized thing sounds nice on paper, but then I'm going to get criticized for being unfair or for favoring some kids over other kids. What's the response to that?
Of course, of course. And, you know, the football players is the first thing that comes to my mind. You know, Friday night suspension isn't going to go down with some coaches. So it can definitely, the student's profile as well as race, and race, class, nationality. And the statistics bear it out. I mean, even in the Fairfax County system where we were looking, the schools that are majority Hispanic or majority non-white, higher numbers of black students have far greater suspension rates. I think the biggest issue, and I'm looking at a lot of the emails I got here from parents, and I think when it comes to kids, there just is not a black and white, not talking about race, but everything that kids do is gray. And across the board, punishments don't take into account the entire child. That's why this case with Nick is so touching. I mean, his mom, his home life, whether it was, it wasn't economics, it wasn't race, but it was something in his home life was really exacerbating what might impact his decisions and impair his judgment. And that was, you know, the situation with his mom. And just being able to have that kind of discretion over what happens in the home and what this child is coming from can... giving them flexibility can work in the positive as well for the child.
Danny, how do you respond to this? I mean, in fact, one of the things you were saying is that I'm curious about whether the parents at your son's school and your daughter's school, they're in different schools now. Your son's in high school and your daughter's in middle school. What's your sense of how they feel about the disciplinary policies? Do you think that they think that they're too intolerant, too inflexible, or do you think that most of the parents support it?
I think most of the parents support it because many of these kids are just, you're acting out, you need to be adjusted. That's period. And that's what we as parents are saying and we as teachers are saying.
You know, you were also saying, even though you were not pleased that he was suspended because you thought it was excessive for the
infraction. 5 days was too many days.
For what he...
Right.
A first offense for what right. He was accused of doing based on the say-so of one person.
But
on the other hand, you say you think it was a good lesson for him.
Yes, it was, because you were wrong. You know?
Does he think it was a good lesson, or do you think it was a good lesson?
Well, he does now, because he wasn't happy about what happened to the other guys because he didn't think that was fair. But as mommy kept going into it and taking it to the next level, he backed me off. He said, Mom, it's okay. You know what? You were right. I was wrong. I'm going to do my punishment. It will never happen again. I will never be suspended again. That's what I want to hear. As a mom, that's what I want to hear.
What do you make of the fact, though, what Patila was pointing out, that these jurisdictions, even with this, you know, so-called zero tolerance, you know, policy, which is supposed to be based on behavior and not on other factors, there are a disproportionate number of minority kids, particularly black kids, who seem to be subjected to this policy? What do you think that means?
That's totally true. But that's my catch-22. What do you do about it? I mean, that's totally true. But you're talking about somebody who lives in where kids bring guns to school. And most of them are black youth. But that problem, in my opinion, is at the home. And that's where the school can't really reach to.
We're almost out of time. So, Doctor, why don't you just give us a couple more thoughts about what you think might be a better approach?
The important thing, I think, is really that we have to take into account the whole child. And we really need the village to raise the children, which means that the school has to work with the parents and whatever other psychosocial supports are out there if the parents can't come to the table, to really make as optimal a plan for every individual child as possible. The punishments don't prevent, they don't stop kids from making bad decisions. And I'm not sure that most kids are going to learn the kinds of lessons that Danny's son might have learned through mostly her parenting and not so much the
suspension. You're saying that kids, just their brains just don't work that way. They just don't think, oh, I could get suspended for this. Is that what you're saying? Their brains just don't work that way.
Kids are going to make stupid decisions. All of our kids are going to make stupid decisions. The adolescent brain is different from an adult brain. And that doesn't mean that all the kids who make a bad decision can't be saved and shouldn't be given the opportunity to get a good education, because most of these kids are not going to be lifelong poor decision makers.
Until a final thought from you, if you would, what direction is this conversation going in? As we mentioned, in the Washington, D.C. area, in the Philadelphia area, there have been some very focused and intense and in some cases emotional discussions about this because of these events that we've talked about. What direction is this conversation going?
I think this conversation needs to go in the direction, as both moms here said, looking at the whole child, the parenting angle. You know who the bad kid is in your class. You go on one field trip, you know who the problem child is. But you don't do it with one policy without looking at the whole child. In my city school, my kid went to school with children of senators and kids who had to take a bus from the homeless shelter. Those kids need to be looked at a little bit differently on how they are going to be punished when they do one stupid thing.
Because
I think
if a senator's kid brings a gun to school, he should be treated differently than a kid who comes from a homeless shelter.
We're not talking about guns, though. We're talking about kids who goof up. I mean, these are kids who get suspended for bringing Tylenol to school, Advil to school. And I think it takes a teacher's knowing a lot about that child before applying a blanket policy.
And finally, are policies being revisited as a result of these discussions that we're talking about, these incidents that we've talked about?
I certainly think it's happening here. And there are a lot of groups. Fairfax has a N zero tolerance policy reform parent group. They have lawyers. You know, there's a lot of pressure coming on looking at this as a policy.
All right. Petula Dvorak is a columnist for The Washington Post. If you want to read the columns that she wrote about this issue, we'll link to them on our website. Just go to npr.org and click on the Programs tab and then on Tell Me More. She was here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio for the first time. Welcome. Thanks so much. We hope you'll come back.
Thank you.
And with Danny Tucker, one of our regular contributors for our parenting segment, and with us, Dr. Jenna Saul. She's a child and adolescent psychiatrist, and she joined us from Marshfield, Wisconsin. Ladies, moms, thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.